Kaya, Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. My name's Andrew Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and creators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. A BB Butterfly Song is a documentary that starts as a narrative exploration of Melbourne musician David Bridey, best known for his work in bands like Not Drowning, Waving, and My Friend the Chocolate Cake. But then it folds in his life-changing experience of travelling to Papua New Guinea and meeting musician George Telic and the Moab String Band. The film then takes audiences through a journey of discovering Papua New Guinea culture and how Australia's past is intertwined with Papua New Guinea's future. This includes explorations of the engagements during World War II, the devastating volcano eruption in 1994, and the music that emerges from these histories. A BB Butterfly Song arrives as Papua New Guinea prepares to celebrate its 50th anniversary of independence. I interview the director, Rosie Jones, and talk to her about the history of David, of George, and the music in the film. A BB Butterfly Song screens at Perth's Revelation Film Festival on July 5th and 10th. Visit revelationfilmfestival.org for tickets. If you want to find out more about the work that we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Blue Sky at thecurb.au. We are a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. Visit patreon.com/thecurb.au, where you can support our work from as little as $1 a month. If you're unable to financially support us, that's okay. Please consider sharing this interview with your film-loving friends. We'd also love it if you could rate and review us on the podcast player of your choice. It's enough from me. Let's listen to the trailer for A BB Butterfly Song, followed by my interview with documentarian Rosie Jones.
You have to listen to the wind. You have to listen to the birds or the movements of the trees that you can write a song.
Here you're working with archive, just like you did with the family, and obviously there's interviews as well. But I'm curious. I'd love to start talking about working with archive, and like with the family, that's heavy stuff, and you're spending a lot of time creating a story there. Whereas here, I imagine a lot of the footage is a lot more, you know, outside of the volcano stuff.
Yes.
A lot more kind of enriching to deal with. What's that experience like for you?
Well, I have to say the family experience was fairly traumatic because, you know, most of the people who'd been part of the family were not, you know, they were badly affected by it. So it was pretty heavy duty, and that, I guess, takes a toll on you as a filmmaker because you're establishing relationships with people who have been damaged by the group they were, you know, often involuntarily part of, and you're establishing these relationships, and so it's quite tough. And so when Jason Byrne, the producer, came to me, and they had already shot quite a lot of material, you know, the prospect of working on a film about music, a really lovely relationship between two people and the communities that grew from their friendship at the centre of it. Whew, that was a relief. You know, a happy film. It's great. I mean, within that, there's, as you say, there's the volcano and there are a lot of political situations, which, as we know, are not happy, which are difficult. But at the heart of the film was this really lovely, deep friendship between two musicians. So, you know, pleasant change.
Yeah. And I guess because your music is such a core part of it, I'd love to know when the first time that you heard George's music was. What was that feeling like for you?
Oh, well, the first time would have been Tabaran. So in association with Not Drowning, Waving, I just thought his voice was stunning, exquisite. you know, very beautiful. And I've continued to think that, obviously. So I didn't really know that George had a kind of a rock, heavy rock background, and I didn't know anything about string bands, really. So all of that was new to me. I mean, I knew David's music because, in fact, I'd worked at the ABC with Mark Wirth, who was the person who sparked his first journey, David's first journey to Papua New Guinea. And so I'd heard a lot about Papua New Guinea from Mark, and also, you know, I knew David's music and Not Drowning Waving's music, and I was a fan. So, yeah, it was a great project to get invited onto.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was familiar with the music too and had been in awe of it, but this history, this rich, rich history.
Yes.
And then, you know, PNG's just our neighbour, right? And so getting to understand this connection, for me, that was quite something. What was that like for you?
Oh, same here. I mean, I had no idea how close we were. I mean, you look at a map and you go, oh, yeah, they're our neighbours, but you don't really take it in. And I really hadn't thought about the fact that we were their colonial masters, what that relationship meant, and hearing it from Papua New Guineans, that they not looked up to us, but sort of. So their relationship with us was a very colonial one. And I'm actually a New Zealander. So all of this was quite new to me. We've never been colonial masters of anything, really. So it was all very new and very fresh. And I had no idea of the number of languages and all the different cultures and so on in Papua New Guinea. So, and the rest of Melanesia. So it was a real eye-opener.
Yeah. But as you weave all of that into the film too, like, to me, it feels like the original point is obviously George, and then you discover all this other stuff as you go along. How do you deal with the kind of unexpected things that appear, or the history that appears that you go, well, I guess I have to weave this in it too, just to add it. Where is the point where you go, this is kind of enough that we've got a full story here?
Well, I guess you never go, that's enough, because there's always more. I mean, any film you make, you always, you know, the day after you've finished it, you find out some fabulous thing, and you've just got to live with the fact that you can't fit everything in. I guess the really surprising thing for me that I was absolutely thrilled about was David's initiation into the Tolai culture. I thought that was fabulous, and I didn't know if we would be able to get footage. At first, I didn't know there was any, and then to be able to actually see that and sort of experience it with David and see David as the kind of white guy in this cultural, you know, really intense moment, that was fabulous. So there were just lots of things that, in terms of the archive, kept appearing. You know, with a lot of digging, we had two fabulous archivists, Lisa Savage and Peter Fox, and they were brilliant at coming up with new materials. So some of the filmic footage from the colonial side of things was terrific. I mean, shocking, but great to see. And, you know, and some of the cultural stuff. So it's actually the footage at the beginning of the film with David and George in the studio, Lisa found that for us, and that was somewhere in the ABC, and that was fantastic. You know, just all these little surprises that really enrich the film.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Like, I've had a few conversations with people who have delved into archives, but also people who've worked alongside NFSA and their very deep, rich archive of all these stories, and I know that they're really opening and inviting themselves up to being interrogated and explored and bringing those stories to life. You talk about the ABC too and exploring their archive and their histories. When you're doing that and, you know, you're working in collaboration with people, what's the organisations like the NFSA and ABC, what are their feelings and you know, thoughts about having their archives used and shown? They must be pretty excited to be able to actually having it being used in a film this way.
Well, they are, absolutely. But always when you're dealing with these archival organisations now, they're under the pump. You know, they've been so badly funded, particularly the NFSA, for such a long time that it's hard work, you know. There just aren't enough people to deal with the material that's coming in and to deal with filmmakers and so on. So yes, it's great, but it is also, it's always a pressure on the organisation, I think. So you have to allow enough time for turnaround and all that kind of stuff. But I think, of course, you know, they're archivists. They love their material being used. It's the process. If only there was more money, you know, to fund these organisations properly, it would make the whole thing easier on both sides of the equation.
Well, definitely. Exactly. I mean, that's the thing which I love these stories that are getting told out of there and the exploration of what's being told. There was a great series earlier this year about the NFSA, you know, and all this kind of stuff is so important because we get to see stories like your film, which we wouldn't see otherwise. And then, you know, the tangents that come off of that is so vitally important. Yeah.
Yes. There's so much more in the archives. I mean, really, there's such a rich resource. Yeah, it's very exciting. You do the research and you can see what's in there. It's fabulous.
One of the other things which I really appreciate about Abibi is the notion and the real kind of core focus of showing that art doesn't exist in a vacuum. Like, you can have music, but as we're talking about, there is the political and the cultural and all of these different things that are leaning into what creates a song, what creates art and music. Mm. Can you talk about the importance of showing that art doesn't exist in a vacuum?
I'm not quite sure how to approach that question.
Sure, that's okay.
It just seems so intrinsic that, of course, the art comes from the culture that whoever the artist is, it just absolutely springs from that culture, and it relies on there being a group of people and a culture that's being developed, I suppose, or that has been developed and that is coming from. I mean, it's just intrinsic to art.
Yeah. I think part of the reason why I mention or ask is that, in my experience at least, especially when it comes to non-Anglo music or culture, so often there is this tension or almost, from certain sections, this desire to exoticize it in some regards and forget that there is a political or cultural connection to it. And the songs don't, you know, they are explicitly talking about what's going on. There are songs about the volcano and things like that. And people don't often listen to the lyrics or they don't listen to the meaning of the song. And so they just hear this, it sounds beautiful and all this kind of stuff. But there is something so much more to that. And that's what the film does, is it shows and it says, don't forget what the lyrics are saying. Don't forget what the heart is singing. That, to me, is really important.
Yes. Yes, that's true. And particularly in some of the more political songs, we can't forget. I mean, particularly some of David's early work, some of the work on Tabaran, and I think that was when he was first starting to think about Australia as the colonists of Papua New Guinea, amongst many others. But I think he was starting to explore that power relationship between the two countries. A lot of the songs are like that. And some of George's beautiful music, as he says it, the songs spring from the culture. And that's what he's singing about. So I think George says that very powerfully.
I think so too. We are really following two men as well and two different stories about their lives and their music. Naturally, the way it comes together. How do you find the balance to make sure that we're getting enough of both of them?
Yeah, that's pretty tricky because it's so much easier for me as an Anglo filmmaker to go towards the Anglo side, you know, and of course it was much easier to access David than it was to access George. So, you know, David in particular was very strong that we needed to be properly representing the Papua New Guinean culture or cultures, because there's many within the country. So, I mean, David is incredibly conscious of that and was very insistent, really, that we do find a balance. And so that means making, for me, that's my, not prejudice, but your natural inclination, because I don't speak any of the languages of Papua New Guinea. You know, and it's difficult finding a translator and all of those things. It makes it more complicated trying to achieve a balance, but it's absolutely essential.
Yeah. And again, it makes for a richer, those final scenes where they're absolutely talking about the unity of the two.
Yes.
It's really beautiful. Yeah.
Mm. And a bit Natar, particularly, I think that project, you know, that was done in association with Gideon Kakabin, or he was the historian. And that, you know, it was really important that was done properly and with the right process and so on, because that's all about, you know, Tolai culture and Papua New Guinea culture. And it's important that it's done properly.
So in that regard, how do you make sure that cultural safety is maintained throughout the film?
Well, I mean, David knows a lot about it. George was there. They, you know, the film was shown to them so that, and talked about with the elders of the community. So that's, you know, David's pretty in tune with all of that. So I was relying on him and George and George's community to make sure it was okay.
Yeah. And the finished film, have you screened it to the community, and what was their reaction as well?
I haven't been there when it's been screened. It was, it has been on ABC, the Pacific.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Program.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're delighted, but I personally haven't been there to see that. So it hasn't really screened in Australia.
Yeah. So, and we're coming up to Revelation. Yeah. Which is really exciting.
Yes, exactly. Which is great. Yes. And it did screen a MIF,
mm-hmm.
When we first finished it, but that's basically been it in Australia. So yes, it's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know a few people who saw it at MIF last year and loved it, and you know, the reviews and their responses was just really quite ecstatic and just being moved by it. And I think that's coming back to the music, one of the delights about going to see a film at a festival is sometimes you don't know what you're going to go and see, and so you'll sit down and you'll watch it,
yes.
And then you come out and you're like, I've got to go and buy all these albums.
Well, that's right. And at MIF, in fact, they had afterwards George and Talek and the band played.
Oh, wow.
So that made it really fabulous.
Yeah.
It's a shame that's not happening at Revelation.
Yeah, it is.
Because it just really, you know, when you see people in person, we had a Q&A and then they performed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that just really, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what does it mean to be able to screen at Revelation then here in Perth?
Oh, I think it's wonderful. Yes. No, I'm absolutely thrilled. It means the film will get to a new audience. I mean, I'm sure that people haven't heard about it over in WA. So it's just having an audience really brings the film to life. It's really important.
Yeah, definitely. And this is, I mean, when I watch it, it's like I've seen so many great music documentaries at Revelation over the years. And like I mentioned, you step in, you watch them, and then suddenly you're stepping out and you're like, so it's got a whole new music thing to dive into. As mentioned, I already had been familiar with the music, but now I'm going to be listening to it even more. And that's a delight of being able to go and see these kinds of films. But it's a really beautiful music documentary. You've made a great film, and I'm so grateful.
You.
Yeah. Sorry, what were you going to say?
I just hope that... you know, it makes people think more about our relationship to the Asian region as well, because, you know, it's incredibly important, particularly at the moment, because all the relationships between the so-called superpowers and countries in the Pacific, they're changing. And we don't even know basic things about our closest neighbours, you know. So I think it's really important. The more that we can find out about our neighbours and the cross-cultural thing happens within the Pacific, then I think we're in a stronger position when other people come knocking on the door with various deals and, you know, political alliances. I think we need to know who we're living close to.
Well, I mean, that's in one of the early scenes where you're talking about the war and, you know, there was a part of a war was fought there and people are talking about going there and having no idea about the place that they're fighting in. And that's just...
Yeah, exactly.
To me, it's upsetting to know you could go to a nation, not know what it is and possibly die there or, you know, take somebody's life over there and you've got no connection to it whatsoever. And
that's right.
Yeah, it's alarming.
And of course we have this really deep connection,
mm-hmm.
But it just hasn't really been explored by us. And also in terms of travel, people have been so focused on Europe and anywhere else but our own region. And I think, you know, even if on a cultural level, if people can go, wow, look at this country, it's so close, the music, the dance, the languages, everything about it, it's a very exciting place to visit. So, you know, if the film screening at Revelation can inspire people to take an interest, I think that's an achievement.
Mm. Yeah, I'm so grateful this film exists. And, you know, partially because David's work as a musician, like I grew up listening to My Friend the Chocolate Cake and those kinds of, yeah. of, that kind of music was what I listened to. And so getting to see his history and then seeing how deeply he was entwined with everything else was just quite beautiful. So thank you for bringing it to life.
Yes.
And
oh, pleasure.
Yeah.
And his Wontok Foundation, I think, has been doing wonderful work for many years and still is. Mm. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, Rosie, it's been a delight to be able to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Very much.
I'm glad, like, while I really enjoyed and appreciated the family, I'm glad that we were able to talk about this film.
Well, this is definitely a happier film.
Yes, I can imagine that the interviews you're probably doing for this one will probably leave you more smiling than the family, but it's nice to see you on the other side of that experience.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, have a lovely morning.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
No worries.
Okay.
Take care.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this chat with Rosie Jones about her documentary, BB Butterfly Song, which is screening at Perth Revelation Film Festival on July 5th and 10th. For other interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. Please rate, review and share this interview with your film-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and I'll see you on the next one.